Why are police photographing our license plates?
What are we doing for veterans returning home damaged physically and mentally, suffering from depression, homelessness, and suicide?
Why did the Supreme Court deposit corporate money into our electoral process?
Should we redefine middle class as working poor? Or is it just another Wall Street merger?
What's really behind new voter picture ID laws in certain states?
Why aren't NBC, ABC, CBS, and Fox asking these questions?
Hello, everyone, and welcome to The Reasonable Voice, where we believe everything is political and all our problems are due to a lack of education and a lack of equality, at least equality of opportunity. We look into the arts, finance, and humanities to learn the solutions. The Reasonable Voice's Blog Talk Radio comes to you to connect politics and finance, humanity and world peace, and the arts in a way that encourages all to think for themselves, so the best political and life choices are made by all. With artistic overtones, The Reasonable Voice is an advocate for a peaceful and prosperous world filled with creativity, equality of opportunity, and political unity. My guest today is Andrea Miller, who is a dear friend, but also Andrea Miller was the 2008 congressional candidate for the 4th District in Virginia. She is currently the Deputy Field Director for PDA and Co-State Coordinator for PDA Virginia. Since 2008, Andrea Miller has been very active on the ERA, that is Equal Rights Amendment ratification, both in Virginia and nationally. Andrea is one of the leaders of PDA's ERA three-state strategy team. So, Andrea, good morning, and how are you?
Good morning, Marcello. It is a beautiful day, and I'm feeling quite wonderful.
Great. You've done a lot of things, and there's some I want to brush by because there's a big event coming up, as I understand it, this Friday. Things are going on today, for that matter. We're recording, everyone, on Tuesday, the 18th of February, but there's a lot of action going on concerning the Equal Rights Amendment ratification, or at least the removal of the deadline date imposed on it by Congress, and that's going to be happening Friday. But let's go through some general kinds of things that an activist, an advocate for equality, such as Andrea Miller is, and the kinds of things she has to face every day while still keeping her eye on the prize, so to speak. It must be a constant state of prioritizing. Do you find that, Andrea?
Well, most definitely, because while we are working on the federal level to remove the ratification deadline so that when we get the three additional states, we have our newest constitutional amendment, we are simultaneously working in a number of states that have legislation to ratify the ERA. Virginia, because we are the very first state to go into legislative session in the country, we have legislation that is currently before the House. We have already passed the Senate. So we have legislation currently before the House. Arizona has legislation, as does Florida, and then immediately behind Florida will be Illinois, Missouri, Arkansas, and maybe even Louisiana. So there is a lot of movement in the states on the Equal Rights Amendment. And as I said, we are working to get the 218 co-sponsors in the House and the 60 necessary co-sponsors in the Senate so that we can indeed remove the ratification deadline, completely clearing the way for those additional states to have their ratifications counted and then added in so that we get our 38.
Fantastic. Now, I know you and I have spoken about this many times, but there still may be people out, especially men, because I remember my first reaction was not inconsistent with the reaction you had heard from many men, and that was, I thought the ERA had been passed. So let's just back up just a tad and give a little history. Indeed, Congress did, the U.S. Congress did pass the Equal Rights Amendment, but it was passed with a deadline. In other words, you must get a third of the states, two-thirds of the states?
It's two-thirds of the states, so that means that because we have 50 states, 38 states need to ratify. So what we say now about the Equal Rights Amendment is we say that the Equal Rights Amendment is unratified. So that way, that sort of takes people to the next level.
Yes.
Because with a constitutional amendment, it's more than just Congress passing it and the president signing it. 38 of the 50 states must ratify or basically say, yes, we accept and buy into the notion behind this amendment. Well, it's true, in 1972, the amendment passed and was signed by the president, and originally there was a deadline on the amendment, but the important thing to understand about deadlines and constitutional amendments is, number one, they are not required, and original constitutional amendments never had deadlines. This is a fanciful notion that started showing up in the 1950s. Hmm. And most importantly, as it relates to the ERA, the deadline is not in the amendment. The deadline is in the preamble, and I normally tell people, think cover page. So when the 35 states ratified the ERA, they ratified the language of the Equal Rights Amendment. Mm-hmm. They did not ratify the deadline. Uh-huh. And that is a very critical legal difference.
Yes.
If the deadline were in the amendment itself, there would be very little legal standing to say, we want you to remove the deadline.
Uh-huh.
The other thing that's critical to understand is that Congress extended the deadline, thereby basically legally proving that Congress is 100% in charge of constitutional amendment deadlines.
Yes.
They have the ability to impose or not impose. They have the ability to extend. And if they can impose and extend, they also have the ability to remove.
Exactly. I see. Excellent. Excellent. And I, you know, and every time you say that in an interview with me, it bears repeating. There are people who don't know it, but also I get re-solidified and focused on, aha, because it really is a web that I think has been, that Congress and other, state governments have sort of played with to twist and turn like a maze sometime for whatever. I mean, maybe some people honestly don't think women should be equal to men, but I think it's political more than anything else. But let's not speculate.
Well,
we've got.
Well, Robert, so I want to grab that thought.
Sure.
You said the biggest problem that we have encountered is people believe that it's already done.
Yes.
We have very few people who do not believe that men and women should be of equal stature.
Mm-hmm.
Those folks are very definitely now in a minority of the minority.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is, as you mentioned, not only men, but women believe that it's already been done. For young women and young people, they simply assume this is something that we did way back when, and they don't need to concern themselves with this. But I think with the case of the new CEO of General Motors, that has very quickly brought this to the forefront of everybody's mind and conversation.
And
a female CEO was offered less than 50% of what her male predecessors had made. So there is now no argument about lifestyle choices, choosing to work part-time, and or qualification.
Exactly.
This is now purely discrimination based on sex.
Exactly. And if people are wondering about why, I mean, when the women got the vote, weren't they made equal? Well, no, they weren't. The amendment to give women the vote was specifically for that. The amendment to free slaves even mentioned men as opposed to all slaves. So women are not specifically mentioned as equal citizens of the United States, whereas in other places in the Constitution, sex is used to guarantee equality. And the most recent, even with Ledbetter, we're guaranteed now women can protest a lack of equality or income equality, but it's only after the fact has taken place. And as you say, the new CEO at GM makes us finally look at that and go, holy smoke, because it's still true, it's alive, and it's and it takes three more states. Oh, and that gets us to, if I can, The tediousness, I understand there's a certain democracy, if you will, that the states have to ratify an amendment to the Constitution. The federal government can't just do it. But when you have, you need 38 states out of 50, we really are talking about 38 different state governments. And getting back to
because the state government is, as you said, its own government.
Exactly.
And so when states look at something like a federal constitutional amendment, then the state looks at it and says, is this something that we believe is good public policy for our citizenry? What gets very interesting is when you have a state government that is controlled by people who are not interested in good public policy and are actually going in the opposite direction.
Mm-hmm. So we are, to get back to Virginia, because it looks like, crossing our fingers, we certainly have a hurdle left, and we're going to talk about that in a minute, but it looks like we are a lot closer than we were last year at this time, and in March 2011, I believe it was, when women had to circle the state house in Virginia just to be, and I remember that day, it was so impressive, in silence and solidarity. Women stood, and husbands came to support their wives as well, as well they should, and stood and encircled the state state house, the General Assembly, which in of itself is a beautiful building up on the top of the hill, and here are the little people, if you will, standing linked arms in silence, which so impressed me. There wasn't a lot of screaming or yelling, but in silence, making their presence known so that the members of the General Assembly had to see them as they passed by to go to work. But things are a little better in the sense that the Virginia State Senate has passed the removal of the deadline, or has passed...
No.
Yeah.
That the state governments have no authority. That is purely congressional authority.
Okay.
The Virginia State Senate has passed ratification of the Equal Rights Amendment itself.
And that's
so if the House were to also pass it, Virginia would become the first state in the 21st century to ratify the Equal Rights Amendment.
My God. So we need three. It is huge. We need three more states, and in Virginia, and God, like you say, it's the 21st century. And by the way, it's the 14th year of the 21st century. Goodness, but if Virginia does that. It is a colossal accomplishment because of Virginia's history and because of the history of the ERA. And we should maybe mention here that in the state of Virginia, there is still wrangling over not only ERA, but same marriage, same-sex marriages. And they're in the Virginia Constitution. That is, for the state, there are things that are...
Well, now, again, the Supreme Court, that has, well, not Supreme Court, but federal court,
yes,
has struck that down and declared that to be unconstitutional. And interestingly enough, when this bill came up in the Rules Committee, which is where we needed to basically cast out of to make it to the full Senate floor,
mm-hmm,
for the vote, Senator Edwards made the comment that as far as economic and social justice for women, Virginia normally tended to be dead last.
Mm.
So when women won the right to vote, basically in the 1920s, Virginia didn't exactly get around to accepting or officially ratifying that until the 1950s.
And you know, you just... And people need to hear this because it's just astounding. We all think, we get up every morning, we go to work, to school, or whatever, and we think we're all equal. And no, there's still battles that are ongoing, and sometimes not reaching the media because those who own the media aren't necessarily interested in promoting the cause. But nonetheless, I don't want to digress, but I do want people to understand it is while the Equal Rights Amendment is really a relatively simple sentence of about 19 or 20 words, it doesn't make women superior to men. It includes men. It simply removes gender as a qualification, if you will, an essential for equal rights constitutionally. And again, if we might, just in the little time we have left in this segment, mention why we keep stressing constitutionally, because if people need to understand, if you're not equal in your right to vote, ballot stations are being closed all over and voters are being intimidated, etc. If you're not equal in your income, and we've seen examples of that, then you're not equal. But primarily, the Constitution, good, bad, or indifferent, with all of its flaws, and it's, being initiated by, a bunch of old white men who own property, but for all of its flaws, the Constitution is the umbrella. And women are not specifically allowed or permitted or written into the ability to stand under that umbrella. And that's just not your opinion or my opinion, but we know we've got Supreme Court justices who have said in cases there is no specific constitutional protection of the equality of women in the United States Constitution. So that's why Andrea's fighting on this, and that's why we're on the radio today. Who's holding up things down there in Virginia now that the state Senate has passed it? It's moved to the House, and we have a specific hurdle. Can we talk about that?
Oh, we most definitely can. When a bill goes before the legislature, that bill gets assigned to a committee. Our bill is currently in Privileges and Elections. The bill that passed the Senate has crossed over to the House.
Mm-hmm.
The chair of Privileges and Elections is refusing to docket or bring the bill forward so that even the committee can vote on whether or not they want to advance the bill to the floor. So we have one man, one individual who has made a decision and claims the bill is not legal. Now, interestingly enough, Delegate Mark Cole is not an attorney. And two of our chief co-patrons in the Senate were both attorneys and have been attorneys with a combined experience of more than 70 years. And they brought the bill forward. Most of the members of the Rules Committee in the Senate are attorneys, and we unanimously passed the Rules Committee. All the Democrats voted for it, and all of the Republicans voted for it. And so now, when it goes to the House, a non-attorney claims this is not a legal bill.
And he needs not justify or explain that in any way. He's the chair, and he just says it's not legal for the Virginia General Assembly to vote on it, even after half of the General Assembly has passed it unanimously with a few attorneys in tow.
And technically, really does not need to give a real explanation as to why he is not willing to hear the bill. This is what we have seen him state in writing, why he is objecting to the bill. Constitutional scholars have basically said, well, this is an idea that has merit. It is well worth pursuing. We believe there is an argument for legal standing of this methodology. So as I said, I find it absolutely outrageous that a non-attorney is going to, on his own, single-handedly overrule constitutional scholars on federal level and attorneys on the Virginia level in his state and just say, I'm not carrying it. That, frankly, is not the real reason he's not carrying the bill. That's simply the public excuse that he is putting forward.
All right, we're going to take a break here. This is getting hot and heavy, and it's excellent. We're going to come back and talk with Andrea Miller some more and find out what, indeed, she and other women are planning to do to address Delegate Mark Cole this Friday. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Blog Talk Radio with my guest, Andrea Miller, who is the Deputy Field Director for PDA and the Co-State Coordinator for Progressive Democrats of America, Virginia. We've been talking about Congress passing back in 1972 the Equal Rights Amendment, but a deadline for its ratification was put into effect in the 1950s, and what has happened is now we need you need 38 states to ratify the amendment before women are equal constitutionally. 35 have ratified it. Virginia is one of the three state strategy that Andrea Miller and her organizations are pursuing, and this is a big week, and we need your help in a call-in on Wednesday and in Richmond on Friday. There is a state delegate, Mark Cole, who's not an attorney but a chair person, and he is blocking the bill that has been passed by the Virginia state from being even discussed or debated or voted on in this Virginia House. So there's your introduction, Andrea. But what motivates Mark Cole anyway?
Well, it's sometimes difficult to understand what motivates people when a group of women actually confronted Mark Cole and they literally were holding the Congressional Review study in their hand and made a comment that the senators who just checked this out of the Rules Committee, most of them are attorneys, and they have no issue with the legality of the bill.
Mm-hmm.
The next question was, will you hear the bill when we remove the deadline? And again, he's confronted by a group of women. His response is, well, I'm not sure. I'm really concerned about women in the clergy. At which point, it's like, excuse me, what
does
this have to do with pay equity or anything else? And isn't there supposed to be a separation of church and state?
Yes.
And that is in the United States Constitution, at which point he walked away.
Hmm.
So there is no logical reason. There is no real legal concern. It is another concern.
Hmm. I see.
It's a religious prejudice.
Hmm.
One man's religious prejudice.
And his religion doesn't think, even though it shouldn't enter into his legal governmental responsibilities, but that aside for a moment, his religion doesn't think women should be equal American citizens?
There are some religions that do not, that really believe that women are supposed to be behind men.
I see.
Now, everybody is entitled to believe whatever it is that they want to believe.
Mm-hmm.
The problem becomes when you impose your religious beliefs on people who do not share your religious beliefs, and you do that as an officer of the government.
Mm-hmm.
So you are suddenly saying, my religion trumps everybody else's religion because I have this belief.
Hmm. And trumps the process of the government doing its job separate from church.
Right. Hmm. Right. And that is the main reason why the United States Constitution very specifically said we must separate church and state. We do not want people attempting to govern a state based on direct policies from a specific religion, because people belong to normally only one religion, and suddenly that starts declaring a state religion or a federal religion, and we don't believe that.
That's right. Neither did Thomas Jefferson. All right. Well, let's...
Or any of the other founding fathers,
exactly.
For that matter.
Yes.
That was one of the things that they were really working against.
Yes, yes. All right. Well, let's... What is it that our listeners can do on Wednesday, February 19th, to help the Equal Rights Amendment to be ratified? What can we do?
Well, there are a number of petitions that are out already. So we have a Virginia petition. We still need people to sign the petition. That's something that you can do today. You will be able to find the petition at kind of the website.
Very good.
www.pdacommunity.org. And it will also be on womenmatteruseyourpower.com. So you can sign the petition. You can on Wednesday is the call-in day, where we're going to be calling Delegate Mark Cole and we're going to be calling Speaker Howell. Delegate Mark Cole, docket the bill. Put the bill up so that it can be heard by your committee and voted on. Speaker Howell, tell Delegate Cole to docket the bill.
Mm-hmm. And to docket, D-O-C-K-E-T, means to put it on the docket, that is, put it on the agenda to be discussed and brought to the floor to be discussed.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right, right. That's exactly right. Docket means put the bill on the agenda so that it comes up for a committee discussion and then a committee vote.
And does the bill have a name or number or both that they make, the callers
yes,
might mention?
The bill has a number. Now, even though this is in the House, because the bill passed in the Senate, we are now dealing with the Senate number. So people are going, why is this a FJ bill instead of an HJ? It's because it's crossed over. So the bill number is S is in Sam, J is in Judiciary, 78. FJ 78 is the bill that we are currently working hard to have heard in Privileges and Elections.
And I ask that question so all listening can both, you know, the more you speak with knowledge of what you're talking about, the more likely a government or an individual anyway is going to listen and realize that you know what you're talking about. But also because, and Andrea can give us the website where you can go check and track the progress of a bill before Congress or before the State House in Virginia by knowing its number. And what is that website again? Is it Track Government? Track.gov?
That's federal legislation.
Uh-huh.
I happen to like using www.govtrack, G-O-V as in victory, T-R-A-C-K.us. And you can go to that website and you can follow the status of our legislation. For the Virginia legislation, it's the Virginia Legislative Information Services. So what I normally tell people, because that website is kind of complicated, it's got a number of dots in it, just Google Virginia Legislature and then, or Virginia General Assembly, and then you will see a link to bill, and then you can click on that bill link, and then you can search by either Equal Rights Amendment, or you can search by the bill number, at which point it will tell you the bill has passed the Senate, it has crossed over to the House, and that's kind of where it is right now.
Okay. And
interestingly enough, Marcella, that bill in the House has bipartisan support. So Delegate Roxanne Robinson, a Republican woman, is a co-patron of that bill in the House.
So we really, you know, something is happening to Virginia, and I think it's a good thing. Obviously, not everyone does, but and it's not all in Northern Virginia. But it seems to me there is a change of attitude toward this very issue, equal rights amendments, equality for women constitutionally, toward same-sex marriage, As this, the proof of this is, as you say, all the Democrats and the Republicans voted in the Virginia State Senate to ratify. That's an amazing turn of events, and I think.
Now it was all the Republicans on the Rules Committee saw something rather interesting during the actual floor vote. There are 40 senators in the Virginia Senate. So our number is 40. People go, aren't there 100? No, that's the U.S.
Yes, the U.S., yes.
In the Virginia Senate, there are 40 senators. And the reason that's important to know is when they took the initial vote, the vote was 32 yes, 8 no. However, the published vote showed 25 yes, 8 no, and 7 not voting. So 7 of the Republicans who voted for the bill on the full Senate floor withdrew their vote, so they were listed as not voting.
And that's to sort of protect them back home?
I have no idea what that idea was. I mean, they initially voted doing.
Yes.
It was an absolute thrill and delight.
Yes.
And then they kind of, under dark of night, were allowed to take their vote back, probably because the bill resoundingly...
Yes, had passed. Had passed, so why have to go back red-faced, as it were, to a constituency that they might, I don't know, I just...
But again, when you look at what people are beginning to understand about the Equal Rights Amendment, there's a lot of talk nowadays about pay equity.
Yes.
And people are beginning to realize that pay equity, unless it's enshrined in the Constitution, is just another law that corporations and businesses will ignore.
Yes.
Because there is nothing in the United States Constitution that says you cannot discriminate on the basis of sex.
Yes.
Absolutely nothing.
Exactly.
So you can sue all you want to. You can spend all your money. You can lose your job. You can manage to make it all the way to the Supreme Court with the best attorneys that money can buy, and there will be at least three justices who will look at you and go, what part of there is nothing in the Constitution that prohibits discrimination on the basis of sex did you not understand?
Yes.
So, in other words, none of these laws have any judicial vetting. Nice idea, but total waste of time when everything is said and done at the end of the day.
Unless we can ratify the ERA.
Right, unless we enshrine equal protection under the law in the Constitution.
You know, and something to the men out there listening, I know I've said this story before on air, but I grew up watching a difference between my mother and father, not a personal difference, but I, especially toward the end of their lives when it was necessary for me to have power of attorney, I saw their checks. Now, they both went to the same federal government, different agencies to be sure, but had the same level of however the government ranks them, you know, a GS-11 or whatever. And the check amounts were different. They were different right up until through retirement. During the time I was power of attorney, they were different right up, and even when increases came, the increases were different. And you know, Dad died, and Mom. Yeah, I mean, I've just been through too much of that in my lifetime. So I say to the men, if only for this practical reason. If you are married to a woman who is working and she's making less money than she should be because she is a woman, then your income, your household income, whatever financial contribution she might make to groceries, the mortgage, the telephone bill, is diminished because she is not equal under the Constitution. You need to think about that.
And I love that, Marcello. And let me throw this in. The next level is, if women can legally be paid less because they are women, this creates a very definite threat to the income of men.
Yes.
Because corporations will simply say, well, you know what? You want an increase in pay? No, we don't think we want to do that. What we will do is go and hire more women because they work for less.
For less, yes, of course. And don't think they haven't thought about it. Yes.
And don't think they aren't doing it.
Exactly. I don't know. We there's a lot of shenanigans going on out there, and I guess they bear at least a glancing mention today. But there's nothing more important than the Equal Rights Amendment, in my opinion, that is facing us, stopping TPP from Pacific Trade Partnership and taking over how We work in, you know, Eric Cantor's down there recently at VMI ranting about how America is becoming a second world power, and GOP is attacking governors in Maryland who and other states that say yes to, we want the benefits of the Affordable Care Act, better known as Obamacare. I mean, there's just so much. But this delegate, Mark Cole, the non-attorney delegate Mark Cole, holding up the vote for the Equal Rights Amendment in the Virginia House, that really takes the cake. I mean, it just, as you said earlier, it's like the Cruz of Virginia, for heaven's sake. One guy standing up and stopping the progress of a governmental body, which limits the progress by extension of the American people. How does that happen in our system? I mean, everyone should have a voice, obviously. Everyone should have a vote. But I'm not... understanding, I guess, the system as well as I need to know that a chairman like Mark Cole can simply say, I'm not going to put it on the docket. I don't care that the state senate has passed it. What do you do?
Well, all you can do is call attention to this behavior and ask people to stand up and object to the behavior. And then when 2016 comes around, because he will be running for office, go find another candidate and vote him out of office.
Yes. And that is the legal, civilized way of doing that. I'm leafing through my notes trying to find Mark Cole's telephone number. Do you have it handy? I know it's area code 804. I wrote about it recently, and maybe it's in my notes, but I'm not seeing it immediately. But what telephone number should we call on Wednesday?
Let me get you that number, because I, of course, have it. So I will give you the Mark Holt's number.
Yes.
And I will also give you the number for Speaker Howell.
Yes.
Because you're going to want to call them both.
Yes.
Now, Delegate Mark Cole, his number is 804-698-1088. Speaker Howell is area code 804-698-1028.
So, Andrea, I know we've covered what's happening on Wednesday, the 18th, in the call-ins that you would like, but now could we have some information about your call to action for Friday, the 21st of February, for people to actually come to a silent protest in Richmond? Tell us about that, please.
Well, we're going to be holding a silent sentinel, and it is going to be at the General Assembly Building, which is 900 East Broad, and we're going to be up on the ninth floor. The Privileges and Elections Committee will be convening at 9:30 in the morning, so we're asking people to get there about 9:15, and we are going to line the halls on the ninth floor. Get there in time. We have green ERA Yes 10 for people, and we will just form a silent sentinel, and then we will deliver the Virginia ERA petitions to a member of Privileges and Elections.
Fantastic. Okay, and I guess one can find parking down there, and anything, any other inside information or website we need to visit to make certain, in case we don't remember all of this?
Well, people can go to www.womenmatteruseyourpower. We have petitions there, so you can sign the petition. We will also have the event there. That will be listed. You can also go to PDA, P community.org, and we'll also have information on that site as well.
Fantastic. Thank you so very much, Andrea Miller, for being on the show with us today. It has been, as always, incredibly informative, timely, current, and educational. And no matter what your sex or political persuasion, you should be listening and following through, because this is about all of us. Thank you again so very much, Andrea, for being on the show. And best of luck Wednesday the 18th and Friday the 21st.
Thank you so much for having me. Take care, everybody.
Bye now. Today, our technical support creative catalyst and spoken word poet, Mr. Bernard Hankins, with Michelle Opperman and Daniel Garner, the literary duo and philosophical minds who created O.G. Rose. Thank you for joining us for our panel discussion today. We have a special guest on the telephone joining us today, Andrea Miller. Hello, Andrea. How are you?
Hello, Marcello. I am doing great. I hope you're having a wonderful day on this glorious Virginia day.
It is a beautiful Virginia day, that's for sure. And speaking about beautiful Virginia days, there are a lot of things we'd like to discuss with Andrea Miller. Let me give you, and she can fill in the blanks, but Andrea Miller is the interim director of the Progressive Democrats of America, and she's also the co-chair still, I believe, of Virginia's Progressive Democrats of America. Everything I've learned about Congress, I've learned from Andrea Miller, mostly by following her around as she walked the halls of Congress and walked in on the offices of congressmen and presented her points of view. There's a lot going on in Richmond, Virginia, as well as Washington, D.C. There's the Equal Rights Amendment moving out to the from committee to the Senate floor. And Andrea, let's pick the subject. Tell us, because I know there's a Senate bill that you are pushing now. Oh, and by the way, there's also a brand new, by the skin of his teeth, elected attorney general in Virginia. Mark Herring, who has now come out to say that same-sex marriages are not unconstitutional, and he's reversed Ken Cuccinelli's ruling on that. So there's a lot we can talk about, but let's learn from Andrea Miller. Andrea, what do you want to talk about first? And we will ask her questions.
Well, first I want to talk about the marvelous day that we had yesterday on down in Richmond on the Equal Rights Amendment. So, you know, we had Senator Henry Marsh introduce our legislation, and our chief co-patrons were Senator Creedy from out in your direction.
Yes, uh-huh.
And Senator Janet Powell. Well, I got a call on Thursday night that the Rules Committee was going to hear our bill on Friday morning at 9:30. So Eileen Davis is from Women Matter, Use Your Power. Mm-hmm. We headed down to the General Assembly where Senator Marsh made it possible for Eileen and me to speak in favor of our legislation.
Uh-huh.
Now, what was really amazing is while we were seated right before the Rules Committee went into session, Senator Jill Holtzman-Vogel walked over to Eileen Davis and whispered, I'm going to join you as a co-patron of your bill.
Wow.
So for people who know about Virginia politics, this is huge and wonderful because it gives us a bipartisan bill. So when we look at our sponsors, we have the civil rights legend from Richmond, who is the elderly African-American statesman of the General Assembly. we have Cree Deets from Southwest Virginia. We have Janet Powell from Northern Virginia. And we now have a Republican from the Winchester, Northwestern, going into the rural area of Virginia. Now, we were expecting that the bill was going to be successfully reported out of the Rules Committee because we just finished the new elections for Mark Herring's seat, which was won by Jennifer Wexton.
Yes.
And then there was a recount on the seat for Ralph Northam. And so both senators were seated on Monday, which basically restored the full 2020 tie in the Senate.
Mm.
And the committees were reconstituted with Democratic chairs. So basically, we knew we were going to win in the Senate. The surprise was the unanimous vote.
Wow, that is wow. Oh, you guys have any questions? Because now's the time. Because I'm sure there are people out there listening with questions. Yeah, she can be overwhelming, well, but it's great. Go ahead.
I guess people are just in shock.
Yes, I know I am.
I guess my question would be, what is the process to reverse a ruling? Because it seems interesting that what Mark Herring did was just like reversed so quickly, you know, when somebody else put it into place. So what is the actual process and how long does that take?
Well, my expertise really is federal. We literally just came into Virginia as a political action committee, so I am getting used to all of the rather interesting, completely different from federal and somewhat convoluted in different ways that Virginia does things. So I am not the expert on that. But again, remember, it is the Attorney General's office that does have the prerogative, if you will, of interpolating and interpreting the meaning of certain things in the Virginia Constitution. So it's going to be very, very interesting watching all this play out, because we do, as Democrats now, control the Senate. So in the event that we end up going back to the legislature for a vote, we will probably be able to win, because with a tied Senate, even if we had no Republicans who crossed over, Ralph Northam as lieutenant governor is a Democratic tiebreaker.
Exactly. How about, let's move on to a moment, if you will, and talk about what's happening with the Equal Rights Amendment at the federal level.
Well, at the federal level, we haven't really been working on the federal level because we were gearing up for the state fights. Virginia is the very first state to bring an Equal Rights Amendment in 2014. And that's really because our legislature literally was the first one in session. The Florida legislature has an ERA amendment. Missouri has one. Louisiana has one. And we also have one in Illinois. Mm. Now, remember, we only need three more states to pass the ERA, and then we need to successfully remove the ratification deadline. So we really began working at the federal level in earnest early, starting probably on Monday. We will then again turn our attention to the federal legislation, because now we actually have a bill that will definitely come out to the full Senate floor in Virginia. So when I notified Senator Cardin's office and Representative Andrews, those are our lead sponsors in the Federal House and Senate. They were very, very, very pleased.
Excellent. So just to be clear for everyone, when we're saying ERA and Equal Rights Amendment, we're talking about Equal Rights, a constitutional amendment to the Constitution for equal rights that would include women along with everyone else, because Constitution...
Well, right. I was going to say the Equal Rights Amendment includes everybody because it says there will be no discrimination on the basis of sex.
Exactly.
Whatever sex you happen to be.
Exactly. And that constitutional right for women is not specifically laid out in the Constitution yet, and people need to know that. There are amendments that give equal rights to black people specifically, and of course to white men.
African-American men.
Yes.
They did not specifically grant rights to African-American women. It was the men.
Yes, that's right. That's right. Thanks for that correction. So it's the women who have been left out, and that's what this amendment is about. And what's sort of different about this amendment is that some years ago, I believe in the 70s, a ratification deadline was added. And that's one of the things you're fighting, Andrea, to have removed so that then it can even be passed in time. And it needs 35, correct me if I'm wrong, states to say yes, and you need three more?
Well, we needed 38 states to say yes, and we currently have 35, so that means we need three more to make our 38. Since there are 50 states, they require a supermajority of the states to ratify and say, yes, we want this to be in the Constitution.
Wow.
Yeah, I have a question, Andrea. This is Michelle speaking. I want to know what have been the ramifications of this bill not having been passed already. You know, I with the specificity of women's rights, what do you think might change if it were to be passed?
Well, for instance, everybody remembers the landmark Duke versus Walmart case, where basically women were declared to be a class, but most importantly, that there was absolutely nothing in the United States Constitution that prohibited discrimination on the basis of sex. So even with the Lilly Ledbetter Act, which gave women a longer time to sue if they discovered that they had been discriminated against by their employers, there is absolutely nothing, should they manage to bring their case all the way to the Supreme Court, they have no judicial standing. So since Duke versus Walmart, basically no sex discrimination pay equity cases involving women have been brought before the Supreme Court because the attorneys have realized women have no judicial standing in the court. So even if we were to pass the Pay Equity Act, that law has absolutely no teeth because the Constitution does not prohibit discrimination on the basis of sex.
And by the way, in addition to attorneys, we have two Supreme Court judges that have said exactly what you're saying, correct? Scalia?
There are actually three. Souter, Scalia, and Ginsburg. So you have way to the left and way to the right. We're both agreed women are not in the Constitution for anything other than voting rights.
Wow. You know, even though I know this, Andre, and we've talked about it before, every time I hear you just say it like that, it just hits me. Because I can remember when I first came back from New York, I took a teaching job in a middle school with actors, and I don't know what play we were doing. I don't remember. But when the kids were making fun of it, I said, you know, all of you need to pay attention to this because you ladies out there in the eighth grade one day will have a job, and you will make three-quarters of what the guys in the room make. You make what? What is it, 77 cents on the dollar to men?
Well, but there's also a racial disparity part that we have to put in. And if the woman is white, then it's 77 cents per man's dollar. African-American women make 65 cents per man's dollar, and Hispanic women make 55 cents. And now I know people have said, well, you know, that's got to do with career choices and the number of hours women make and yak. Barring all that discussion, it's still boiled down to 40% of the time when they were looking at women doing the same job, the same number of hours, with the exact same qualifications, the only difference was sex and or race. And 40% is frankly way too much. This is America. It's supposed to be the land of equal opportunity.
Yeah.
And if my opportunities are limited because of my sex, equal means equal. And that ain't equal.
And you know, it has occurred to me before, too, that if the Equal Rights Amendment were indeed ratified and becomes a part of the Constitution, then attorneys would have a case that they could take to the Supreme Court that would also affect equal pay for women, because now they'd have the constitutional
yes.
grounds to defend it. Yes?
Right. Any laws that we pass regarding pay equity would actually have teeth. Lilly Ledbetter would actually have judicial standing. So people really need to pay attention that these laws that people are trying to pass, if there is nothing in the Constitution that is prohibiting discrimination on the basis of sex, you can feel good for the 5 minutes after that bill has gotten passed, but in reality, absolutely nothing is going to change.
It's interesting because I was just in a play this week called I Shall Not Be Moved, and it was a story of Claudette Colvin, who was a girl who was pregnant, and she didn't give up her seat on the bus, and that's why you never heard about it, because she didn't give up because she got pregnant. And so we know the story of Rosa Parks. So this lady Leslie Baskfield and Chris Ballmer, they co-wrote this play, kind of the discussions between Rosa Parks and this girl. And at the end there was a talk back, and one of the audience members brought up an interesting point. He's like, you know, when people don't do a certain thing in a nation, all you can do is like introduce laws where it's kind of like forced. But then he made the other point, which we talk about a lot. He's like, but then you have the attitude part. He's like, you know, how do you change people's attitudes, you know, to also be in line with the law? And he's like, that's a much more difficult process.
Yes.
And I think that's why we bring a lot about, you know, creativity and art, because we, you know, we like that idea of transcending, you know, people's differences through that. So it's just interesting, the law versus attitudes. And you can introduce every law you want, but if people don't want to change their minds and hearts, you're kind of they're going to do it because they're supposed to do it, but they're going to do it with bitterness, and then, you know, they're going to find some backdoor way to get back,
and they're going to work on creative ways to manage to be within the letter of the law, but
right.
completely outside the spirit. And I want to say one other thing about theater and art. That is so powerful for helping to educate people about what is really going on. Because remember, in the United States, we do not teach American history.
Yes.
We teach American history without the contributions of Indians, women, or people of color.
Absolutely true. It's a very upsetting thing to me, Andre, because I was a history teacher, and when I found out years after I was teaching in school that I hadn't been teaching history, there was just so much left out. That's I think we're going to close on that, because I'd like people to really remember the poignancy of that comment, that we we have we started as a nation of white men who were rich enough to have property, and we have taught that history throughout most of the life of this nation, and we need to go back and ingest into the history books and into our minds the full history. We want to thank you so much, Andrea Miller, on the phone with us today in our special panel. Thank you, Andrea, for being with us.
Thank you for continuing to listen, support, and share The Reasonable Voice with your friends. We are now accepting offers for your company or organization to advertise with us, and welcome new sponsors for The Reasonable Voice. To apply, please email us at thereasonablevoice@gmail.com.
Thank you for joining us today and every day, and recommending us to all your friends, both online and offline. And please download our downloadable podcasts. I am Marcello Rolando, The Reasonable Voice, hoping you will become one of the reasonable voices heard round the world.